sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom. Welcome to the Too Jewish radio show and podcast with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation.
I think the best answer to the attacks on the Jewish people is for us to be more Jewish.
This morning, Rabbi's guest is Jonathan Greenblatt, the CEO of the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, talking about the anti-Semitic massacre at Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia. We'll also have a visit from Tom Price, our expert on the international Jewish scene. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on 2 Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. 2 Jewish is paid for by 2 Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2 Jewish.
Shalom and Chag Chanukah Sameach, a happy holiday of Chanukah. Well, this is usually a time of rejoicing and celebration for Jews everywhere in the world, a commemoration of the great victory of our ancestors over deadly religious persecution so long ago. It is the Festival of Lights, tied for the very longest of all Jewish holidays, and one with so many lovely aspects, perhaps my favorite holiday. Now, Hanukkah is not as theologically important as the Jewish High Holy Days or the three pilgrimage festivals, but historically, it's close to the most important of all Jewish holidays. Without the victory of the Maccabees over the Seleucid Empire, Judaism would have disappeared 2,200 years ago. So would monotheism, the belief in God, along with it. That means that without the events Hanukkah celebrates, Christianity would never have existed at all. Islam would never have been created, since both religions emerged out of Judaism and its belief in one God and incorporated so many of its teachings, and of course our whole Bible, into their daughter faiths. Hanukkah should be a time to rejoice, to bring light to a dark time of year, to celebrate the victory of faith over repression, of belief over hypocrisy, of good over evil. But this year, the experience of Hanukkah has been severely damaged by the horrific anti-Semitic Islamist brutality of the attack at Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia, the cold-blooded murder of 15 people, the wounding of dozens more by radicalized Pakistani Muslims with connections to the Islamic State. As you probably know, that attack was the worst gun violence in Australia in 30 years. The worst anti-Semitic attack in Australian history, and the culmination of a series of anti-Semitic attacks over the past 2 years that the current government of Australia has been very weak in responding to. This attack in Australia took place at the popular Hanukkah on the beach. Remember, it's midsummer now in the Southern Hemisphere, an event put on by Chabad. The murderers, father and son immigrants to Australia, took long guns and killed two rabbis, a Holocaust survivor, and a 10-year-old girl, among the more than 24 innocent people they deliberately shot to death. This was pure anti-Semitic hatred, cold-blooded terrorist murder of Jews, celebrating the holiday that has guaranteed religious freedom for all. A journalist, author, and podcaster I admire, Chaviv Redigur, noted that this attack, like the murders in Manchester, England on Yom Kippur, and the many attacks that continue to take place all around the world, often on Jewish holidays, including in the U.S. and Canada, are all supposedly a response to Israel's war in Gaza. He makes clear this is a preposterous lie. The whole world condemns Russia's Putin-driven and incredibly brutal invasion of Ukraine. Yet nobody takes ARs and deliberately murders Russians on the beach in Thailand or Sydney, or commits arson against Russian Orthodox churches around the world. There are literal genocides that have taken place all over the Muslim world, including in Syria, Iraq, and Iran. And genocidal mass murders are being perpetrated today by Muslims in Sudan and Nigeria. Yet mosques are not attacked, nor are they surrounded by protesters in London or Amsterdam or Paris or Toronto. Christians perpetrate what many believe to be genocide against Muslims right now in the Central African Republic. But churches around the world don't have full-time security forces to protect them from terrorism. This has nothing to do with Israel or its military or political actions. It is pure, unadulterated anti-Semitism, racism, terrorism, all against people gathering to celebrate a festival of religious freedom from persecution. Now, there were warnings in Australia over the last couple of years. Synagogue arsons in Melbourne, Jews attacked after pro-Palestinian terrorist protests in Sydney and Canberra, Jewish delis attacked, protests where "Globalize the Intifada" was chanted again and again, along with "From the River to the Sea." The Australian police, and in particular its Labour government, have been slow to label these acts anti-Semitic or to identify the attackers as Islamist terrorists, which is what they are. Well, at Bondi Beach, the Intifada has been globalized, as it was at Manchester on Yom Kippur. Intifada means murdering innocent civilians going about living their lives, shooting them or blowing them up in order to cause chaotic destruction. It is deliberately horrible actions taken by fanatics who seek to destroy civilization. In particular, it is a hate-fueled effort to annihilate a people, the Jews, who constitute less than 0.25% of the world's population. It is an intentional, publicly proclaimed effort to commit genocide on all Jews. This, my friends, is virulent anti-Semitism perpetrated by Islamist fanatics who seek to kill all the Jews in the world. It has nothing to do with protecting the poor Arabs of Gaza. It is funded by Iran. The sole courageous act taken by the Australian government was expelling the Iranian ambassador for fomenting terrorism and anti-Semitism. But this is also funded by Qatar, you know, Qatar, that great ally of America. After Bondi Beach, Jews in Australia, there are about 100,000 of us there, less than 2% of the Australian population. Jews were told not to hold public celebrations of Hanukkah as a form of self-protection. For a few days, all Jewish schools and synagogues were closed. That's the opposite of what Hanukkah represents. This is a time to affirm our right to celebrate our heritage and history publicly and positively, to light bright lights on these darkest of days. The only Jewish gatherings in Australia for the first few days after the attack were funerals for the murdered victims. If that wasn't enough bad news this Hanukkah, we have also been witness to riots against a Hanukkah celebration in Amsterdam. Can't have Jews publicly holding a holiday celebration in concert, can we? We had the arrest as well by the FBI of four pro-Palestinian terrorist left-wing extremists who were plotting to blow up synagogues and other sites at New Year's in California. Oh, and a New York Republican gala that featured neo-Nazis, virulent anti-Semitic conspiracy theorists, and white nationalists. This world is going mad right now. What is happening is something that's happened many times before in history. By the way, the latest updated statistics show the vast majority of those who died in Gaza were armed terrorists, not civilians. Perhaps 60,000 of the 75,000 who died in Gaza were Hamas terrorists or Islamic Jihad terrorists. In any case, we all hoped that the end of the Gaza war would bring some sanity back to this planet. In fact, we should have been freed of that illusion when the end of the war and the return of the living hostages and the dead Israelis and the release of Palestinian terrorists and the return of many Palestinian prisoners of war wasn't cheered by any of those who agonized about the poor Palestinian victims. That is, the end of the war, the end of the danger to Palestinians brought no joy to those who were chanting for the destruction of all Jews, because these protests were never about Palestinians, nor the evils of the Netanyahu government. They were about destroying the only Jewish state on the planet and trying to destroy all living Jews. That's called anti-Semitism, oldest and most virulent form of racism in world history. It's back now with a vengeance, if it ever really receded, which makes Hanukkah even more important this year. We must fight for our right to be Jews and do so publicly, proudly, and with great energy. We must bring even more light into this dark time. To play us in this morning, here's a choral version of a fantastic Zalvel Zilvert's composition, Al HaNisim, sung just after lighting candles throughout the festival of Hanukkah. It's from a recording called Music of the Burnt Synagogues, which seems appropriate this morning. These lights remember the miracles God did for our ancestors. It's solely used to dramatize the great redemption, the wonders and salvation at this time of year, in those days long ago. That was Hanerot Halalu for Hanukkah. I've sung that piece in solo performance many times, but it was arranged for the great male choirs of the synagogues of Europe that existed before the Holocaust. This is the seventh day of Hanukkah, and the last night begins at sundown. Join me for a virtual Hanukkah menorah lighting this last night of Hanukkah on the Beit Simcha Facebook page at 5:30 p.m., Facebook.com, Beit Simcha Tucson. Every night of Hanukkah, we light different Chanukiot from my collection of Hanukkah menorahs, sing different songs, and share different stories. When we return in a moment on to Jewish, our guest this morning will be Jonathan Greenblatt, CEO of the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, responding to the awful attack in Australia and explaining what is being done by the ADL and what we can each do at this challenging time. All when we come back in a moment on Too Jewish. We welcome to Too Jewish this morning a special guest, Jonathan Greenblatt, a past guest as well. He's the CEO of the Anti-Defamation League, sixth national director. We're going to talk today about some urgent and painful matters. Good morning, Jonathan. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be on.
So the horrible incident at Bondi Beach, tell us what we know and how Australia has handled anti-Semitic incidents over the past couple of years, if that's not too leading a question.
No, it's not leading at all. I mean, look, stepping back, so what do we know about the incident? This was the worst anti-Semitic attack in the history of Australia. 15 people were killed, gunned down in cold blood, by two men with rifles, with long guns. They methodically shot people on the beach. There were more than 1,000 people gathered on Bondi Beach for a public Hanukkah ceremony. It happens every year. It's, I think, the biggest public Jewish gathering in the country. Again, thousands of people. And it was just getting started, so there were over 1,000 people there already. And among the 15 people killed, we know, for example, 87-year-old Holocaust survivor, other grandmothers and grandfathers, a 10-year-old child, a 29-year-old recent emigre from France, a rabbi, a Chabad emissary, a father of five. I mean, it was a diabolical scene. Dozens of people were injured, and we may still learn of more who we lose to their injuries, who succumb to the wounds in the coming days. Now, as it happens, anti-Semitism, you know, has not been a feature of public life in Australia for a long time. I mean, the country has the largest population of Holocaust survivors outside of the state of Israel. It was a haven for Jews escaping the ashes of the Holocaust after the Second World War. And yet, since October the 7th, anti-Semitism has skyrocketed. It's up nearly 500%. Talking about acts of harassment, vandalism, and violence. And we know this at ADL because we work on a daily basis with the Executive Council of Australian Jewry, which is sort of the parent organization. Australia participates in the J7, which is the kind of body of the seven largest Jewish populations in diaspora. Australia is one of the seven largest communities in the world, and as the Secretariat, ADL deals with all of them on a daily basis. So the community has been asking for more protection, asking for more support for the government, and those, as recently as last week, made a plea to the Prime Minister and warning him that worse could come if he didn't tamp down the rhetoric and take action. And look what happened.
You know, in the interest of full disclosure, I worked as a rabbinic intern in Sydney, not too far in Woollahra, eastern suburbs, not terribly far from Bondi Beach. It's a great place. It's an incredible Jewish community. My first day visiting patients in the hospitals, I had to use every bit of every language I knew because there were survivors from so many different places, Yiddish, Spanish, you name it. This is a shock to the Australian Jewish community, but there's been rising anti-Semitism in Australia now, not directly since October 7th. What has the government done and not done?
Well, look, there's a lot of things they have not done. So number one, there has been rabid incitement in Australia. I'm not talking about, quote unquote, protests against Israeli policies. I'm talking about ugly actions targeting Jewish individuals and institutions for the crime of being Jewish, for the crime of supporting the Jewish state, for the crime of being proudly and openly and unapologetically Jewish. I mean, the stories are legion. Again, rhetoric calling to bomb Tel Aviv, to globalize the Intifada, and other open calls for violence. Secondly, there's been a rash of vandalism and attacks in Australia. Just a year ago, last week, was the one-year anniversary of the firebombing of Addis Israel, a congregation in Melbourne.
Right, the Orthodox Shul in Melbourne.
We've had kosher synagogues that have also been vandalized. We've had Jewish people in public places attacked. You may remember a couple of years ago, there was a hostage taken by a so-called ISIS-inspired gunman in Sydney. So there have been a series of these attacks, and there has not been an effort to clamp down on the rampant Islamism. So the two individuals who were accredited, if you will, with this attack, one of them was killed, the other one is in the hospital, just came out of a coma, this father and son duo who apparently were inspired by ISIS. But just a few months ago, at the behest of the Israeli government, when provided with indisputable intelligence, Prime Minister Albanese finally took an action. He expelled the Iranian ambassador because the Israelis were able to identify and reveal to the Australian authorities the role that the IRGC played in two of the anti-Jewish attacks I just mentioned, the firebombing and the vandalism. And so for the first time since the Second World War, Australia expelled an ambassador. Again, in this case, the ambassador to the Islamic Republic of Iran. But the truth is that there have been a pattern of activities long before then and since where the prime minister has simply not been strong enough, which is why the community has been clamoring for help before a tragedy would have happened. And again, we know how things played out this past weekend.
We will talk much more in just a moment with Jonathan Greenblatt, the CEO, National Director of the Anti-Defamation League. We come back in a moment on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a fabulous Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson, the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this winter. Established exactly 7 years ago by terrific congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy, progressive congregation in Northwest Tucson and the foothills. Beit Simcha is open to everybody throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org. We welcome members and guests. Call 520-276-5675. Religious school is going great for school-age children and grandchildren. Join us in Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tykes Experience, Confirmation, and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org. BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org. And join our virtual menorah lighting for this last night of Hanukkah tonight at 5:30 p.m. on our Facebook page, facebook.com, Beit Simcha Tucson, BEITSIMCHA Tucson. Beit Simcha services, classes, and events are open to everybody. Come Friday night, Shabbat evening celebration services are at 6:30 p.m., always followed by a delicious Oneg Shabbat. Saturday morning, Torah studies at 9 a.m., services are at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. You can come to services on our Facebook page as well, Beit Simcha Tucson, BEITSIMCHA Tucson. All of our Adult Education Academy classes, and they are extensive, are taught live and on Zoom. Find out about them at our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org. For more about Beit Simcha, to come to services, religious school, and Torah Tykes programs, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, rich array of Adult Education Academy courses. We have a brand new Taste of Judaism series beginning soon, all taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook. Go to BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, at Beit Simcha, the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, Kvetcherkvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18 at gmail.com. That's T-O-O, JewishRadio18 at gmail. Or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine. Over 250,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify, too. Post a rating, review 2Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments really help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, when you travel around the Jewish world today and you meet somebody who doesn't speak your language, your best bet usually is to try Hebrew. And if you've got some conversational Hebrew, you can communicate fairly well. But that was very different at different times. It used to be that Yiddish was the best language to have in dealing with Ashkenazic Jews, and Ladino was Sephardic Jews. But you grew up, as fine a linguist as you are, you didn't grow up with any Yiddish at all, right?
Right. I mean, a couple phrases and a couple isolated words that everybody knows, like schlep and schmuck and stuff like that. But I couldn't put together a sentence.
You said only one grandparent spoke Yiddish, and she always ended every conversation with her friends with Zei Gesinnt.
Right.
So that much you picked up. What were the languages of origin in your family?
Russian on my mother's side and Hungarian on my father's side.
So, you know, Russian would have mediated in favor of somebody having some Yiddish, depending on how long they've been in the United States, of course. But Hungarian Jews never spoke Yiddish. They spoke Hungarian, or they might have had a little bit of German.
Right.
The challenge of communication, Jews have always been multilingual to some degree or another. I'm not sure that's true of American Jews, but it's certainly true of Israeli Jews today who speak Hebrew and English and a fair amount of Arabic. A lot of them speak Arabic and then have usually picked up something else. What languages do you, you've noted some other languages that have been valuable to you in communicating in Jewish places around the world?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, coming back to Jews in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, they pretty much were all bilingual in German and Hungarian, if they lived in the Hungarian half of that empire. But my father's grandmother, this won't surprise you at all, knowing me as well as you do, she was fluent in 14 languages.
14?
Yeah.
Wow.
And until she had all of her 10 children and moved them to this country, she had never been outside of the region where she was born, which is a part of Hungary that is now Ukraine, but in the course of the 20th century, it was the Austro-Hungarian Empire, then it was independent Hungary, then it was Czechoslovakia, then it was then it was the Soviet Union, then it was independent Ukraine, then it was Slovakia. I mean, people in this town changed countries like 9 times in the course of the 20th century. So there was a reason for them to know all these languages. And my great-grandmother was both a businesswoman who also was quite stubborn and decided at some point in the 1880s to put herself through law school so that she could argue a court case against a non-Jewish neighbor whose pigs were contaminating her water sources. And she won the case and then never went to court again. But that was the kind of person she was. And luckily, she was in my life until I was 14, so I have a pretty good memory of her.
That's a great story. I guess just a little bit of historical perspective. When you're communicating with Jews from other countries, historically speaking, up until about the year 1000, Aramaic would have been the language you would have used anywhere, even though it was not a spoken language in many cases, but Jews knew Talmud. Talmud was Aramaic.
Right.
That was the best
bet. Also certain prayers like the Kaddish.
Yeah, of course. Kaddish is still in Aramaic. Yikum Purkan. I don't know. There's some other prayers in the liturgy that are still in Aramaic.
Right.
And so the challenge of finding a way to communicate with people who are, you know, very different places is always a Jewish issue because Jews have lived in so many places. But I think today it's just kind of leaning in its way towards Hebrew. And then, of course, English, which has become the universal language.
Well, I also want to interject here something from my earliest travels, which were like 50 years ago or 55 years ago. You've heard the story of how I met an Irani rabbi who invited me home for Shabbat dinner after services.
Yeah, in Shiraz, a guy who was like 40 generations of Iranian rabbis. Yeah.
Yeah, or 50. I mean, he went by the destruction of the first temple.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
And they'd been in Shiraz all those centuries. Quite impressive. He spoke a little bit of Hebrew, but it was mostly biblical Hebrew, but he spoke French. And what I discovered is in countries where you would never expect, where there was never a French colonial presence, they were never part of a French empire, but highly educated people, whether Jews or not, spoke French as like the international language. It was the English of the whole world until English became the English of the whole world until after World War II.
Yeah, the lingua franca, which is now English, which is ironic.
Right, but I mean, I spoke French with older, educated Jews in all over Turkey, in Belgrade, in Thessaloniki, and in this case, in Shiraz, Iran. That was just like the language of highly educated intellectuals was French, and a lot of Jews were, for a variety of reasons, better known to you than to me, highly educated. That was their path to
advancement and to success.
And a degree of acceptance.
Right. Tom, thanks so much. We will talk in English next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A Jewish boy sees that his neighbors have a Christmas tree with lights. He asks his father, "Dad, can we get a Hanukkah bush?" And his father says, "Absolutely not, David. The last time we dealt with a lighted bush, we had to spend 40 years wandering in the desert." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you, for this season. You should live and be well, and no bushes. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion of Vayigash is the climax of the Joseph story that fills the last sections of the book of Genesis. It's always during Chanukah that we read from the great narrative of Joseph. Seems appropriate, for it is a time on the Jewish calendar when we celebrate receiving miraculous assistance from God. And the concept of grace, chen in Hebrew, is a central theme in Joseph's narrative. The last four weekly portions of Genesis form a unique and beautifully wrought literary work focused on the figure of Joseph, with a sub-theme on his brother Judah, which has been called the first truly modern piece of literature. This is particularly impressive since it was written at least 2,500 years ago, and some might add a millennium to that number. Many literary techniques are used that you can find today in the best novels: foreshadowing, cliffhangers, subplots, elegant wordplay, role reversals, startling surprises, cutting in and out between different stories, intrigue of all sorts, character growth, and failure. The story of Joseph is better written, richer, and more dramatic than most of our best books and movies today. And the Joseph story's long-term implications are far more significant than our contemporary myths. After all, it's because of Joseph we end up down in Egypt and are eventually enslaved, liberated, and reinvented as the great people of Israel. But with all the twists and turns, and with the deeper historical meaning, the overriding message is that ultimately, as Joseph himself says to his brothers in Vayigash this week, God has a greater plan. We're just part of it. We can't know the whole. But ultimately, we will serve a higher purpose. There's something about this story that compels us to examine our assumptions about just how things work in our world. Unpredictable things occur. What we expect is often not what happens. Fate may play a role. The last can rise to first, and justice may ultimately be done. Only God really knows how it all goes together in the end. So, what's left for us to do? Well, if we follow both Joseph's example and his words, a lot. We can strive to repair damaged relationships with our family. We can work hard, help others, seek to prevent disasters from occurring in society. We can quite literally keep the faith, believing in and following God's ways. And if we are given the opportunity, we can forgive those who have hurt us in the past. Great lessons all from Joseph for this week and every week. When we return in a moment on Too Jewish, our special guest, Jonathan Greenblatt, the CEO of the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, will talk about the current anti-Semitic climate and the Bondi Beach massacre, all when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world, with commentary from Rabbi Sam Kohan.
Aheinu, aheinu, al beis Yisrael.
Rob Reiner, beloved Jewish film director, actor, and liberal activist, was murdered in his Brentwood, California home, along with his wife, producer, and photographer, Michelle Singer Reiner. The deaths of Rob and Michelle, Rob was 78, she was 70, whose work brought lighthearted comedies and weighty dramas with Jewish sensibilities to the mainstream, shocked Hollywood. The pair's 32-year-old son, Nick, was arrested and charged with the murders. He was caught in a motel washing blood from his clothing. The Reiners were found by their daughter, Romy. Rob and Nick Reiner partnered a decade ago on the autobiographical drama Being Charlie, inspired by Nick's longtime struggles with drug addiction. Nick co-scripted the film, following the troubled son of a famous actor in and out of rehab as his dad prepares a run for governor. Rob Reiner himself was a vocal Democratic Party activist who flirted with running for public office. He never did, but he was a vocal opponent of President Donald Trump. Following the news of the Reiners' death, our illustrious president responded by insulting them on his social network, saying that Reiner died due to the anger he caused others through his massive, unyielding, and incurable affliction with a mind-crippling disease known as Trump derangement syndrome. The president added he was known to have driven people crazy by his raging obsession. The president's crass, heartless, and tasteless response provoked criticism, even from some of his usually most subservient bootlickers. Reiner's profile as a Hollywood liberal was in part stoked by his formative acting role as a star of the sitcom All in the Family, when he played a young liberal foil to Archie Bunker.
Well, what would our leaving solve? I mean, with or without protesters, this country would still have the same problems.
What problems?
Well, it's the war, the racial problem, the economic problem, the pollution problem.
Oh, come on, if you want a nitpick.
Nitpick? Let me tell you something, Mr. Bunker.
No, let me tell you something, Mr. Stivic. You are a meathead.
What did you call me?
A meathead. Dead from the neck up. Meathead.
After leaving the show, Rob Reiner ventured out as director and screenwriter. His filmography encompasses some of the best and most generation-defining movies of the 80s and 90s, including his first feature, which kind of invented mockumentaries, This is Spinal Tap, the marvelous The Princess Bride, When Harry Met Sally, Misery, The Sure Thing, Stand By Me, and A Few Good Men. The son of Carl Reiner, legendary Jewish comedian and director, and actor and singer Estelle Reiner, Rob Reiner grew up on the sets of TV comedies like The Dick Van Dyke Show. Rob had a bar mitzvah, but the family was not observantly Jewish. His big break came when he was cast as Michael Meathead Stivic, the left-wing Polish-American son-in-law to Irish-American bigot Archie Bunker on All in the Family back in 1971. All in the Family, of course, was a massive hit. Reiner's character appeared weekly in 8 of the show's 9 seasons. Reiner left the show in 1978 to become a writer and director of films. He continued to appear in front of the camera, though. Some of his movies, like This is Spinal Tap and The Princess Bride, were not immediate hits, but have become beloved cult classics, spawning some of the most quoted lines in movie history. A Few Good Men, his 1993 military drama starring Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson, was nominated for the Best Picture Oscar. Reiner's first wife was actress and director Penny Marshall, which ended in divorce. On the set of When Harry Met Sally, Reiner's 1989 romantic comedy, scripted by Jewish writer Nora Ephron, starring Jewish actor Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan, as lifelong friends navigating mutual attraction, Rob met Michelle, a photographer and his future wife, when she happened to walk past. Their mutual attraction inspired him to change the movie's ending, allowing Crystal and Ryan's characters to get together. Rob also cast his mother, Estelle, delivering a famous line in New York's landmark Katz's Deli.
I'll have what she's having.
The moment was one of the most overtly Jewish of Reiner's work, but even when he was working on mainstream films, Jewish humor informed his approach. Billy Crystal, a frequent collaborator, brought Borscht Belt stylings to The Princess Bride, was among the first people to visit the Reiners' home after their deaths. Jewish actor Harry Shearer, who co-starred in This is Spinal Tap, said Reiner was a mensch. Michelle Reiner was the daughter of a Holocaust survivor and sister of Rabbi Suzanne Singer, a Reform rabbi who spent 15 years at a synagogue in Riverside, California. Among Rob Reiner's final films were a documentary about his Jewish comedian friend Albert Brooks and a documentary about the rise of Christian nationalism. My aunt was in Auschwitz. She survived. My wife's mother survived Auschwitz, but her whole family was killed there. And I visited recently, Reiner said. I'm very well aware of what can happen when an autocrat takes over a country. In other news, as more information comes out about the horror in Sydney, an older Jewish man tried to stop the Bondi Beach Hanukkah attackers. He was their first victim. Caught on dash cam, Boris Gurman, 69 years old, came upon the attackers as they exited their car and confronted them. The dash cam footage shows Gurman grabbing a gun before the attacker retrieves another weapon and shoots him. Gurman was thrown to the ground during the confrontation. The attackers, authorities have identified as Sajid and Naveed Akram. Boris Gurman's wife, Sophia, 61 years old, was also murdered at the outset of the attack, which killed 15 people gathering for the Chabad Hanukkah celebration on the beach. The couple, immigrants to Australia, were married for 35 years, retiring from their jobs as mechanic and a postal worker. In the moments before their passing, Boris, with Sophia courageously beside him, attempted to intervene to protect others, said a statement accompanying a crowdfunding campaign. This act of bravery and selflessness reflects exactly who they were, people who instinctively chose to help, even at great personal risk. That's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish, our guest this morning. Jonathan Greenblatt is the CEO, National Director of the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL. Jonathan, I wish we could talk on happier occasions. It somehow seems like there's always some awful anti-Semitic act that we have to deal with. That didn't start.
No, I think it's not an accident that we're talking, having this conversation, Rabbi, on the heels of this attack on the first night of Hanukkah. It's not an accident that in Manchester, England, two Jewish people were killed after a car ramming incident on Yom Kippur at a shul. It's not an accident that the 10/7 attack happened in Simchas Torah. And it's not an accident that Hamas targeted Passover seders in Israel during the Second Intifada. Like, it's not an accident that our enemies, whether inspired by Islamism or other forms of extremism, intentionally try to subvert our days of worship, intentionally try to undermine our security on our most sanctified holidays. But I think the best answer to the attacks on the Jewish people is for us to be more Jewish. It is to celebrate. It is to dance. It is to sing. It is to worship freely and openly and proudly and not allow the other side to terrorize us into winning.
You sound like a rabbi. That's great.
I think it's from the Rebbe. I mean, I think the Rebbe talked about this, and Rabbi Schlanger of blessed memory in Australia had a similar thought.
I saw that. Yeah, absolutely. And that is, I think, what every rabbi worth his salt, that's what we're saying. And, you know, bring light into darkness, be more Jewish, you know, don't allow this kind of hatred to triumph. I want to follow up because people say, oh, this isn't about Judaism. It's an attack on Zionists. That's not what this is.
That's a lie. That's a fiction. That's kind of like saying, I mean, look, I don't want to draw a comparison, but let me just be clear. Zionism did not start in 19 with Bibi Netanyahu. Zionism did not start in 1948. Zionism did not start with Der Judenstaat and Theodor Herzl in 1897. Zionism started with Moshe Rabbeinu, okay? Zionism started 3,000 years ago. There's a reason why every Jew in every synagogue in every country on the planet Earth since the destruction of the Second Temple has prayed towards Jerusalem. There's a reason why every siddur in every language from every denomination that you might open on every page has a reference to Zion or Eretz Yisrael or whatnot. I mean, it's because Zionism is fundamental to our faith. It is essential to our identity. It is indivisible from Judaism. So yes, there's a political manifestation of it in this moment, but the anti-Zionist uses that language with intention. They are not simply trying to dismantle a political project, although they are. They're not simply trying to destroy the state with the largest population of Jews in the world, although they are. And they are not holding Jews to a double standard to which they don't hold. They are not only holding us to a double standard to which they don't hold to any other people, although they are. They are trying essentially, Rabbi, to invalidate that which validates us, which is our connection to the land and the connection to our heritage, which is, again, central to our identity. they're trying to break the covenant, and I don't think that's a bond we can ever allow them to break.
So what does the ADL do to respond? Obviously, you're connected to some degree with the Australian Jewish community. Your focus is everywhere in the world, but you can't be focused everywhere. How does the ADL respond directly?
I mean, look, the ADL, our theory of the case, if you will, is we have to respond downstream when things happen, which is why we focus on protecting communities. We track and respond to incidents as they occur. We monitor and disrupt extremists before they can act and carry out crimes. We engage and train law enforcement, the largest training of law enforcement in the United States on extremism and hate. So downstream, we try to protect our communities. But we often try to move upstream. And part of moving upstream is using innovation and partnerships to connect more effectively. So we organize all the diaspora communities, the major diaspora communities, through our J7 initiative. We work hand in hand with other Jewish communal organizations here in the United States, from the Orthodox to the conservative to the reform, from political entities to cultural entities, whether it's, you know, JCCs and summer camps, or it's Jewish federations and other kind of communal organizations. I don't think anyone has the silver bullet. I don't think anyone can do this on their own. We as a people, Am Yisrael, are stronger when we are together. So we lean into being together and working together as much as we can.
I was in Israel recently on a Zionist Rabbinic Coalition trip. Always great to be there. It's much more like it was before October 7th than it has been at any time since. We were at the foreign ministry meeting with the person who's in charge of the anti-Semitism division. She said, "We're doing everything we can. I'm the whole division, basically." Does leadership have to come from the state of Israel in a way that it hasn't before in addressing anti-Semitism?
Look, I think it's fair to say that anti-Jewish hate mutates. And over the centuries, we've seen it go from, you know, trying to invalidate the Jewish faith and then trying to invalidate the Jewish race. Now it tries to invalidate the Jewish state. And so all of us have a stake in this, in particular, the state of Israel. Now, I don't think Israel is responsible for anti-Jewish hate at all. I think blaming the victim is repellent. And yet I do think that Israel can be intentional and deliberate and think about how it can develop policies and create programs which normalize the Jewish state for so much of the world. I mean, if you think about it, Israeli soft power could be tremendous. Israeli innovation is extraordinary. Israeli cultural exports are wonderful. Kind of Israeli cuisine is some of the best in the world. There is more to do to spread Israeli culture and to share Israeli soft power so that our story, which is really like the story of the West, if you look at the history of Western civilization, so much of it is built upon literally a foundation of Jewish values. There wouldn't be a New Testament without the Old Testament, right? There wouldn't be this basis of knowledge as we know it without the Talmud, without all the Jewish scholars and scientists, you know, philosophers and poets have given over the years. So I think that sharing that story, spreading that soft power, would be a very positive thing for the Jewish people in Israel and beyond.
You know, Hanukkah is a good time to talk about that. I like to say, without the events of the Maccabean Revolt, there'd be no Judaism, there'd be no Christianity, there'd be no Islam, there'd be no Western civilization.
100%. I just think the ISIS, the nihilism of ISIS, the entropy of Hezbollah, the empty, vacuous, kind of destructive, you know, tactics of groups like Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood, they're not just about destroying the Jews, although they are. Make no mistake. They single out the Jews for their terror. And yet, they're also anti-Western. And we need to realize that connection is indeed real. And we need to do our best to push, to expose it and push back on it. Because when we do that, all of us win. When I say all of us, I mean those of us who support Western civilization and the Judeo-Christian kind of foundation upon which it's built.
Is this the worst anti-Semitic period you've ever experienced?
Well, I mean, look, my grandfather was a Holocaust survivor from Germany whose entire family was exterminated. The rest of my grandparents were refugees and immigrants from Europe who lost everything. My wife is a refugee, political refugee from Iran. Her family also almost lost everything and had to flee with not more than the clothes on their backs. So, I mean, to be frank, in America, the incidents are higher than we've ever seen since we started collecting this data almost 50 years ago. And yet, Rabbi, the Jewish people have known hardship throughout our existence. this too shall pass, but it's not, we're not going to come through this unless we fight for what we have. That's what I want all Jewish people to remember. Like, we have freedom, but freedom isn't free. We've got to fight for the privileges we've earned, and this is those, one of those moments.
I want to thank Jonathan Greenblatt for a great visit here on Too Jewish, a timely one, unfortunately. What's a last message you'd like to give people on this Hanukkah?
Be more Jewish. Light your menorah with pride. Put your menorah in the window. Let the whole neighborhood smell the latkes sizzling on your frying pan. Spin that dreidel and sing those songs with the joy that we as Jews have earned. It is our right, and we're fortunate to have what we have. Relish this moment. Celebrate, daven, worship. You know, again, I think we should enjoy and rejoice as best we can, and then knuckle down, because this is the fight of our lives, and the only way through it, the only way past it, is through it.
Jonathan, where can people go to find out more about the ADL, to find out more about you?
I would hope they would go to ADL.org. That's ADL.org.
I think we can figure that one out. Chag Chanukah Sameach, Chag Urim Sameach.
All right. Thank you, Rabbi. I appreciate you. Chag Sameach, and wishing all of your listeners not just a joyous Hanukkah, but a peaceful and prosperous secular new year.
From your mouth to God's ears. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Our guest next week will be Professor Samuel G. Friedman, prominent author and journalist on the 25th anniversary of his seminal book, Jew vs. Jew, The Struggle for the Soul of American Jewry. Join us, Congregation Beit Simcha, each Friday night. Services in Onig Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning, 2, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading in Kiddush in person and on our Facebook page. Our playout this morning is from 70s American singer-songwriter Don McLean of American Pie fame. It's his unique tune, Dreidel. I just heard this for the first time. Amazing. I thought I knew every Hanukkah song. This one comes from 1972, but it's a good way to finish our Hanukkah music for this year's festival, celebrating 8th and last night tonight. Join us on Congregation Beit Simcha's Facebook page. Light the menorah with me in our virtual Hanukkah celebration at 5:30 tonight. My friends, have a fine conclusion to Hanukkah. Chag Urim Sameach, a happy Hanukkah. A joyous festival of lights and latkes and a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
I feel like a spinning top or a dreidel. The spinning don't stop when you leave the cradle. You just slow down. Round and around this world you go.
Too Jewish is sponsored by Too Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.
Slow down. We'll be right back. trust in tomorrow, it's a lie.